Our reading is from the book of James, chapter 3, verses 1 to 12. Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. If you can remember as far back as 2 weeks ago when we looked at a section of James chapter 1, you'll recall that one of the author's warnings was about the power of the tongue to cause harm. And here we are in chapter 3 now, with James continuing with this message. Now, the fact that so much is written about it in a relatively short book of the Bible emphasises the importance of the message and how needed it must have been for those members of the early Christian church receiving the letter. To get this message across about just how powerful the tongue is, in spite of how small a part of the body it is, the writer uses quite a few everyday images, and I really like them. They work for me. So let's just have a look at them. There's the picture of the horse controlled by the bit in its mouth. Even if you have never ridden a horse, I'm sure you'll understand the analogy, as you'll have seen loads of footage on documentaries, on footage of ceremonial events in films of how horses are led with the reins in the hand of the person guiding the horse and that bit in the horse's mouth. And the whole body of the horse does move as a result of that bit. Without it, a horse isn't going to go anywhere that the rider or the guider of the horse wants it to. While the technology of ships has changed dramatically since James, much more than a horse has, I'm sure that you'll still be able to very easily relate to how the rudder works. Again, it's a really tiny part of the boat, the rudder, and it's also pretty light in weight compared to the rest of the boat. And yet, it completely dictates the direction of the ship. And if there's a problem with the rudder, there's a huge problem with the boat. And it's one of those things that leads to the RNLI going out on rescues. There was one recently close to the area in which I live. And it was as a result of fishing gear getting tangled up in the steering works of the boat. We've all seen how a small spark can lead quickly to a large fire. And sadly, We see over and over again how something like a discarded cigarette end is so often found to be the cause of devastating forest fires, which destroy properties and destroy lives. James goes on to elaborate on the fire parallel in much more detail. He draws attention to how our tongues have the potential to also cause devastation, and not just to those who receive the words and are harmed by them, but also how very damaging they are to the individual who speaks them. So when we read in verse 8 that no human being can control the tongue, that could be quite depressing. It could be a really demotivating thought, giving us a sense of powerlessness. That actually, what can we do about it? We just have this part of our body that damages and we have to live with it. But no, that is absolutely not the case, as the writer goes on to point out in the last few verses. The fact is that the power of words can be used for good as well as bad. And we briefly looked at that a couple of weeks ago too. We know, don't we, from personal experience, that words can really boost us. The difference between saying thank you to someone or not is massive. Offering a compliment can boost a person no end. It can give them a real stride to their step for the rest of that day and beyond. Offering just words that encourage can last a lifetime in a positive way, as much as awful words can linger for a very long time and be damaging. Asking how someone is, it's a simple thing, but it can help others to feel that they are really cared about and that matters. So our words can just as easily motivate someone as discourage them. And if, as the words of James suggest, we have little control over this little part of our body, well, how then do we use it for good rather than the opposite? And again, it's all there in the passage. Really, it's the central theme, because it goes back to that theme that we've been looking at for quite a lot of weeks now, that our lives have to be Christ-centered. We have to avoid hypocrisy that can often come with religious practice. Verse 11 asks the question, can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? Now, again, I think we can all relate to that. And I think scientifically, we all know the answer. It's no. We cannot have fresh water and salt water in the mix and then taste them differently or use them differently. The salt water completely mixes with the fresh water. And what that says is that it's impossible to have our lives flowing with good, for good to come out of our mouths rather than evil, when we have Christ living in us. Love, not hate. Compassion, not cruelty. Forgiveness, not bitterness. Verse 9, with the tongue we praise our God and Father, and with it we curse human beings. Now that's a direct criticism of the hypocrisy that comes from religious worship, if it's hollow. If we're going through the motions, through the actions, we might be reading the word, we might be listening to sermons, to talks, we might be singing all the songs. But if we are truly inviting God into our lives and worshipping him, there is no place at all for treating others badly. Now, that is not to say that we don't all mess up at times, and we do. We are, of course, forgiven. But it's about filling our lives to the brim with the love of God, inside as well as out. And our worship needs to be real. It needs to be life impacting, not superficial, not something that is just done on a Sunday morning, not just something that is done when we sing worship songs. Our worship needs to be real. And that way, as Christians, we will bear good fruit. And the reference to fruit trees in verse 12 is a clear echo of Jesus' own teachings on how to bear good fruit. The reference to the body that we find in James may also bring to mind Romans 12, where Paul refers to the Christian community as the body. Individually, we're all different parts, but we make up the whole. And I think we can certainly draw from that, that James is also warning us, not just as individuals, but as a Christian community, as churches, as a whole. It can be so easily to damage people as a church community. And churches, Christian communities, can become corrupted by how they present themselves, by who they are. And again, they just have to be centered around Christ, not around individuals, not around religious practice, but around Christ. And that way, just like we've looked at with the individual, we will be overflowing with love as a community. And we won't have to try at being a good witness. We won't have to try to reflect the love of God, to reflect Christ as a community. It will just happen because it will be coming from the very heart, from the very core. And that embodiment of the love of God will mean that the tongue, that all that horribleness that can come out of our mouths as individuals or as a community will be controlled. And it will be used for the power of good rather than evil. And that, of course, is an everyday activity. It's an everyday action. It's an everyday control. We need that control every single day of the week in every encounter that we have with others. And that is our act of worship. We have that constant opportunity to build up others, and we have the constant opportunity to knock them down. We can attract people to the Christian faith, or we can put them off. We can either reflect the love of God or the opposite.